Welcome to The Parish, a community of ordinary people walking together in the way of Jesus. The messages are just one part of the Sunday morning experience, and we hope you join us for worship and the rhythm experience soon. We meet at 9:30 a.m. on Sunday mornings.
Thank you for being here, T. Do you want to just start off with just sharing whatever, like, little bio, something you want us to know about you, your life, where you work, where you live, what you do for fun, your dogs, whatever you want to share about.
Yeah. Is this thing on? Check mic 212. Normally I'm, like, loud enough, but I don't really need one. So this is, like, an awkward experience. Yeah, so I actually grew up in, we're in Oregon, okay. I just moved from Oregon to Washington, and I keep forgetting where I am. I'm in Oregon. We're in Oregon, in case you're wondering. So I grew up in a little town in Washington, and it's called Rainier. It's like 1,500 people. And moved to Eugene, Springfield in Oregon for school. I was kind of the kid that nobody was betting on when I was in high school, mostly because I was trying to burn everything down all the time. But I managed to graduate, managed to go to college, and I started walking with Jesus when I was about 15 or 16 through Young Life. I was like, I know we have some Young Lifers in the building, so, you know, the kid that's like, let's sit in the parking lot and pray for the furthest out kid and then try to talk to them and they're going to tell us to F off. That was me. So they kind of chased me for a while, and I definitely have my, as you'll learn probably in our talking, my struggles with Young Life. But the beautiful thing about it for me when I was a teenager was that, like I said, a lot of people were not betting on me. I got treated pretty poorly by a lot of adults. I had a rough gig at home. I had severe ADHD, just struggled in general. I was pretty much like high or drunk all the time or beating someone up, just being ridiculous. And these people just kept coming to my school and kept on trying to know me. Which was hard for them for about a year. But they, the first time I was Young Life, they remembered my name. And probably the most important thing to me to this day is people's names. Like when I go to a restaurant, I always learn the person's name who is our waitress or waiter, the bartender. Like I just think names, saying people's names is really important. That kind of changed my life. Like I felt seen, I felt loved, I felt like they saw me, and they're actually the ones that spoke into my life the idea of more, like leaving my town, going to college. I didn't believe that any of that was going to be for me. We were super poor. The year that I left for college, my family made $22,000 that whole year. So back then, and I think it's still a myth, you know, that college is for people with money, and that's not true, you know. Going to Oregon changed my life. I ended up halfway through college becoming a youth pastor in what I would describe as a country club church. Just a bunch of white people with their smiles screwed on, you know. And I showed up in there with like my cut off like camo shorts and my hot pink chucks. And all these parents had been gone for the summer doing stuff with their kids, and they came back and were like, who the hell is that? Like, what is happening? But that, you know, having been done Young Life prior to that, the only thing I knew about working with kids was going to them. So I had this, like, little youth group of, like, I don't know, like 15 middle school boys who I just threw shit at all the time. It was fun, and we loved it. But I was like, where are all the other kids? You know, like, all these kids have families and stability and whatever, and that's just was not normal for me. That wasn't who I hung out with. And so I started going to the local high school campus. And, you know, being from Rainier, Washington, where there's no diversity at all, I stepped on a Springfield High School's campus, and I was like, oh, my God, this place is amazing. Like, so many different types of kids, so much going on. I just instantly fell in love. And it just brought to life something different in me. Like, I quickly learned that I loved diversity, and I loved different people and experiences, and so I kicked it around there for a couple years, and got back involved with Young Life, left the church, still really grateful for that place. There's a lot of people there that are like parents to me to this day. But yeah, being on Springfield High School's campus was really special. It taught me a lot about the world. Yeah, opened up a lot of doors. From there, I helped start Vida Joven, which is Young Life in Spanish. I do not speak Spanish, and I'm very white, as you guys can tell. But I noticed, you know, like when we were having our Young Life clubs and stuff, that it was, again, like a lot of white kids in spandex, you know, jumping around. And I try to bring some of our Latino kids. They're like, I am not going in there with all those crazy white people. Like, what is happening? And there was a language barrier. There was a culture barrier, like all these things. And so we were like, let's do something different. And so I can't remember where we started our first club. I think it might have been in my house.
It wasn't in Joby's garage.
No. It was in my house. Yeah, so my friends are here who led Young Life with me back then. Gabby helped start Vida Joven. But yeah, it was in my house, in my garage. The neighbors were always like, what the hell's going on? There's like music bumping, people rolling up, you know, like it was crazy thing. Anyway. Yeah, so we did that for a long time, and that was incredible. Just bringing in like a different perspective. After that, I came to be a program director for a drop-in center for homeless and street-impacted kids. I worked in a juvenile detention center part-time for like 9 years. So that initially, that was like a lot of my ministry experience. When I was 30, so almost 7 years ago, I came out and got fired from everything. The drop-in center where I was working for 4 years as the director was a faith-based organization, and they fired me for being gay. Young Life, I had actually just kind of skated out from being a paid staff person and was volunteering for urban multicultural stuff, and also got the rug pulled out for me there. It was kind of like, you know, Tuesday I was super respected, valued, all the things, invited into spaces like this, and by Wednesday, people were ignoring me in Target or accosting me in Target. people had been my mentors for years, wouldn't talk to me. I got crazy phone calls about how I was like dragging people to the pits of hell, comparing their porn addiction to my sexuality, you know, all kinds of stuff. It was a good time. I went back to school. To get my master's in school counseling, because I was like, man, I still want to work with kids. I know that I still have value. I wanted to do something, you know, and so I did that. I was dating someone at the time. We came out together. We got married, and then we got a divorce. Yeah, COVID. COVID was a lot. It was a lot. Sheltering in place was terrible. I had emergency surgery. It's a good time. I helped start a nonprofit in Springfield, Lane County, working to end homelessness. We opened an emergency shelter in the midst of COVID. I don't know how much of this happens in Wilsonville, we have a crap ton of need and so much homelessness in Springfield. And when COVID happened, they shut down everything. Everyone panicked, and you'd think services would have kept their doors open because it's like, where are people going to go? But they didn't. Everyone panicked, which is fair. But we had kids on the streets who were like dying. Like literally people were preying on them because it's like sheltering in place, where are they going to go? So the drug use went up. Kids weren't eating. There was nowhere for them to go. So we raised like $150,000 in like 3 weeks and opened an emergency shelter in a church. Served like 100 kids, ages 11 to 21, over the course of 3 months. I think I was a social worker also at the time at a alternative school. I decided to leave Oregon and kind of start my life over. Do something different. I was kind of tired of like walking around a community that I felt like had like hurt me, you know, at every turn. I was very involved in the faith community. Eugene is an interesting place because people think that it's like super liberal, and it is. The civic community is, but the church community, the Christian, you know, community is very conservative, and they were all very heavily involved in my world and vice versa. And so, I don't know, I just was, I needed a change. And so I moved up to Washington, and I've been a program director, program manager, whatever the hell my title is, for a independent and transitional living program for youth coming out of homelessness, escaping sex trafficking, labor trafficking, domestic violence. We work with BIPOC and refugee youth. And actually just got my dream job. I start on Wednesday. I think I get a new job like every year or something. I still have ADHD, you don't outgrow it. If they tell you you outgrow when you get older, it's not true. I am gonna be a dean of students in a middle school that's very diverse, and I know no one, so just kind of jumping in. That's so awesome. I don't know why I decided to tell you my resume. I didn't plan anything. I just was showed up here this morning, so you're welcome.
Something you need to know about Tana is being her friend. I would call her on the phone, and she'd be working at the school, and you know, we're having like a deep conversation about life or whatever's going on, and then she'd be like, "Hold on a second," and she puts the phone down, and she yells like profanity at this kid, you
know, lovingly, like, yeah. Lovingly,
and then she's like, "All right, what were you saying, Haim?" You know, so. T, you've always had this like heart for justice and for caring for people. Where do you feel like that heart for justice and loving people well comes from?
I know I'm supposed to say Jesus. That was a joke. Sorry. Oh gosh. I think like being a kid that felt like it, what it was like to have people, well, as a kid and now as an adult, feel oppressed. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that shit pisses me off. Like, when I see people not being cared for, and I see systems and humans taking people's power from them, I don't know how many of you in your life have felt, like, powerless, but it is a horrible feeling. And when you think about the safety of a home, of your literal life, you know, walking through a grocery store, you know, a lot of my background is working with young people and their families who have experienced homelessness, incarceration, what it's like to be a person of color in a world that is full of, you know, especially in places like Oregon and Washington where it's not very diverse. You know, it's a lot of people that don't look like you and don't speak your language, and it's scary, you know, and hard to navigate those spaces. And having walked through a lot of that with kids and families, it pisses me off, you know, to have to live your life every day feeling unsafe, even just in a conversation, you know, like because you're trying to find the cereal you like. Like, it just doesn't feel fair. I don't know, I think I just, even as a kid, I think I always, it was running, like, coursing through my veins, like, to make things right. Like, things should be right. And so, you know, even though I, you know, didn't give my life to Jesus or whatever until I was, like, 15 or 16, the way that I operate now and believe now is, you know, as a child of God, like, I do believe I was created in the image of God. Like, I didn't need to accept Jesus into my life. He was already there. They were already there. And when I look back on when I was a kid, even when I was outwardly doing all these things that people would deem as, like, sinful or bad or whatever, like, I was badass, you know? Like, I loved hard, and I stuck up for my friends, even if that meant I was going to spend the rest of the day in detention. It's pretty much where I lived in middle school. Yeah, I don't know. I think that we love and believe in and serve a God that, I think of, like, Micah 6:8, you know, like, do justly. There's no question there. And so for me personally, I think it's just always been in me. Yeah, and I just said this really quick, too. I think my kids are the ones that have taught me the most. Like, I have my master's. I have done all these things. I've been in all these spaces where I've been taught, you know, and I've learned. But working with young people, specifically, like, when I was working with kids on the streets, watching them be given a gift of like money or new clothes or whatever, and then our drop-in center would close and I'd be driving home and I'd see those kids who were given things giving it away to other people on the streets. Because as far as they were concerned, they just got to be in a space where they felt safe and loved. And, you know, it was like, I don't need this extra. I mean, I remember when we were at Young Life Camp, and I used to take my street kids to College Work Week because they loved to work and, you know, get their hands dirty and give back and help. But I also, you know, they got to have a bed for 5 days, which was cool. And at the end, you know, of every Young Life Camp, they always do like some sort of offering where you get to give money to another ministry or opportunities for their kids to go to camp. And one of the staff at the camp happened to be sitting by us and watched one of my boys give. And they always say like, oh, you can spare your cheeseburger on the way home. It's like some dumb crap that they always say like about whatever. This kid literally can't spare his cheeseburger on the way home, right? Like, he's like, he's got $2 in his pocket and he's going home to live under a bridge again, and he emptied out his pockets like into the bucket, you know. So I'd say my kids probably have taught me the most about justice and what, and being on the streets. Like, there's a lot of perception and judgment about who those people are and what it's like, but there's a code, man, and they take care of each other and look out for each other, and it's pretty special.
Yeah. I'm going to be mindful of time. We could listen to you all afternoon, but we have like 5 to 8 minutes, just so you know.
Oh.
And then,
praise the Lord.
But I really want to get to this, T. Like, because you brought up Jesus, could you share just like, where have you experienced God the most in your life? And then maybe like an add on to that, like, as a church, you know, they're supposed to reflect God and the love of Jesus. Like, what would you give for advice from your own life towards a church, the parish, to reflect God's love?
What was the first part of the question?
Where have you experienced God the most?
Yes, yeah. Yes.
It's just, I mean, a small question.
Yeah, you know, no, I'm just going to bust this out here in a minute and 30 seconds for all of you. I mean, I would say, I mean, I already said this, but definitely like in my kids, but personally, like, when I was coming out, I remember it was like this game of chess, you know, like, because I knew I was going to get fired, but I also knew I had all these kids and mentors and volunteers and staff who were, like, doing this work who kind of felt like were counting on me to, like, keep that going. And I don't know, it was a terrifying time, you know, that had been my life for, like, 15 years. And I remember, like, I shared this with my friends actually last night, they're here, but I remember sitting at my kitchen table, like, journaling and stuff, and, you know, I never wrestled with God themselves. It was always, like, in that space, it was, like, the institution of church. It was people. Like, when I thought about what I was afraid of losing, I never imagined it being God. I pictured the people and the spaces that I had been, like, residing in, and the thing that God continued to say to me was, there's more, keep going. Like, that's all I knew. Like, there was no promise of, like, this is going to be okay, this isn't going to be terrible, but I don't know, I could feel it. Like, I knew there was, like, more on the other side, I don't know, I'd say that was the time, you know, where I experienced God the most. Like, I'll be straight up with you guys, like, you know, reading the Bible or opening my Bible is a super traumatic experience still. You know, over the last 7 years, like, I mean, I'm technically still an ordained pastor, you know, it's like comical, like, it's hilarious. But I don't know, like, I think that, like, the Spirit of God that exists and exists in me and in all of us, like, is the thing that never left me, and that it's okay to wrestle with that, and it's okay to not open your Bible. Like our relationship with God doesn't have to look like devotions every morning before we go to work, you know. Like, I'm sorry, I'm not trying to, like, make jokes that much. Like, if you do that, that's really cool. Because I have a book I read. I read my Meditations this morning by Richard Rohr. You should all just read Richard Rohr's shit. It's really good. But even journaling is feels traumatic sometimes, like, because it was such an intimate space for me before, and it is, and I know God will meet me there, and it's, it just feels painful still. I don't know, I think, wrapping this up, the tangible stuff, again, what I was, like, reading this morning was just that, you know, we show up and we say that we believe these things, but, can you calm down back there? But truthfully, like, I'm gonna get in your shit a little bit. Like, coming to church on Sunday mornings is super easy. I mean, sometimes it sucks. You're like, I'm so tired, I just want to sleep. But like, doing something with what we say we believe is like a whole nother jam. And I know people preach on that all the time and all the things, but it's not just like showing up on Thanksgiving, you know, with your family at the homeless shelter once a year, or like giving money and all that kind of stuff. Like, it can be as simple as learning the name of your waitress and paying attention to them as a person. I mean, we went to Oswego Grill the other night and ended up having this, like, this waitress just shared all this stuff with us. And it was because we were present and we were paying attention. And you don't always have to be that way. That can also be another level of, like, exhausting. Like, you have to take care of yourself too. But, I don't know, how we show up in the world matters. How we take care of people around us matters. How we take care of the earth matters, you know, like, we only have one. So I guess my thing is, like find it, I don't know. Again, it doesn't have to be like volunteering somewhere. Just like find those spaces in your day where you can pay attention to what's going on around you, like who's hurting around you, who's struggling, you know, like I have a new staff person in my program who we hired, and I noticed she wasn't bringing lunch every day, and it's because she has 7 freaking kids and doesn't have money, you know. She was my intern, she's probably in her 40s, and has had a really hard life, and wants to give back and be a part of this work, and making $20 an hour. She literally texted me the other night and said, thank you so much for this opportunity. Like, this is going to change my family's life. $20 an hour. Like, are you freaking joking? Like, oh my God. So like, my staff, you know, like, we've, and this is not a faith-based organization, you know, and I will tell you, some of the best Jesus I've ever seen was not by people who call themselves Christians. Like, it just isn't. And it wasn't. And my staff stocked our fridge with stuff for all of us so that it wasn't like weird, like, here, Maria, we got you this stuff. You're welcome. Like, we noticed you weren't eating. Like, don't make it freaking weird. Like, be creative in how you show up for that person so they don't feel uncomfortable, because Maria's a badass. She doesn't need your freaking food, you know? But, like, also, it'd be nice to eat, you know? So, like, we stocked the fridge for all of us and asked her what she liked, and so we were getting food for all of us. So, like, she's got stuff there to eat. You know, like, just little things like that, I think, go a long way.
Well, I feel like I could listen to you all afternoon. We did 2020, so I do want to close. Is there anything last that you feel like you wanted to say that you didn't get a chance to?
I just say thank you for having me this morning. I know this was, like, brief, but this is the first time that I have sat in front of a church and shared anything in almost 7 years. I wasn't really tripping on it too hard, but then I, like, started bawling during worship, so that was cool. Yeah, it was just very overwhelming, and, you know, just, like, I think a promise that I keep chasing. You know, there's, at this point, you know, nothing really in the Bible or nothing that people are telling me that is telling me there's more, but I can feel it, and so, I don't know, this opportunity this morning, I think, is affirming of that. And being, you know, a gay person, a queer person, coming to a church and speaking. I don't know, what you guys are doing here is huge. I will tell you, the biggest barrier of me coming out was I didn't think gay Christians existed. Someone actually said to me, Donna, but you believe in Jesus. And I said, yeah, I do believe in Jesus and I'm gay. You can be both. And there is a whole world out there, you know, there are a lot of spaces, but they, are few and far between and hard to find. And so keep doing the work, you know, don't let the haters hate too hard. Just put more haterade in your coffee in the morning, you know, so you're just like repelling it. Yeah, you're doing the work. You know, Jesus, I read in a book once that Jesus is not a bouncer at the door of our churches deciding who gets to come in and who has to stay out. Jesus is always ushering people in. And that's not just ushering them in to sit in your chairs and give money, because there are churches that do that. They're like, yeah, of course, we love everyone. We don't love you enough to value you as a person and allow you to actually participate and like teach or be in leadership or hang out with our kids or whatever. But you can sit here and let me talk at your face and you can give me your money. That's not true belonging. That's not actually ushering people in. That's not inviting people in. That is a weak ass gospel. That's not who Jesus is. And so I'm proud of you guys for doing something different.
Well, I love you, T. Thank you for sharing. I'm going to just close in a word of prayer. And then we do have a 5-minute break. And then we have a 20-minute rhythm experience. We're going to process a little more. So let me just close in a word. Thank you, God. Thank you that you introduced me to my friend Tana. Thank you for her perspective. I thank you for her friendship. And God, I just thank you for your love and the way that you write stories and you bring people together around love and justice. And so, God, I just pray that something would resonate here in each of our hearts and our spirits. Love you. Amen.
We appreciate you listening online to our talks from previous weeks. For more information about our church or to see where we are currently meeting, please visit our website at www.theparish.us.